Thank you for joining me, my friend. A great show lined up with Mayor Andrew Gillum with me today. Fascinating conversation. And a guy who flies drones, a commercial drone pilot, Gerald Tukes. And if you really want to avoid all kinds of weird stuff happening to you on the internet, well, Miriam Dady's got the second part of her conversation with Israel Roberson. Stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax. And it's done.
I take care of the whole person, interweaved throughout our office visits. If we're talking about a general medical office visit,
right.
I'm counseling patients on how to structure their life.
Dr. Mignon talking about helping you maintain your health.
If you're overdoing things and patients walk in and say, oh my gosh, I feel so stressed out, or even young people, a 16-year-old could feel stressed out. And what does that really mean? I mean, people throw that term around, but I'm feeling overwhelmed. I don't have any time for myself. I'm not sleeping well. I'm exhausted when I wake up in the morning. Well, what are we going to do? So to help people adjust their mind or their thinking or their perception and their plan to change that.
Your family, your health, your doctor. Dr. Mignon with Health and Wellness Centers of North Florida. Call or click 850-656-2006 or TallahasseeHealthandWellness.com.
Welcome to another exciting edition of this here fine radio show, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, bringing you all that we can possibly stuff into 2 hours of conversation with the people who are making things happen around town, things that you may already know about to some degree. Maybe it's the stuff that you're talking about this week. We think so. In some parts of the community. And if you're not, you're going to be talking about the coming budget year for the city of Tallahassee. Kind of makes a difference in terms of services rendered and such. Let's see, close to $702 million proposed for the coming budget year, 16-17. Yeah. So we're going to have a conversation then with our good friend, the friend of Tallahassee, the Honorable Andrew Gillum, mayor of this fine city of ours, who in the second hour will be with us for its entirety. We're going to find out not just about the budget and the city and its operation and all those kinds of more, we'll say, practical things. The budget process is always tough. Last year was even tougher because there was a bit of controversy involved there with proposed budget increases. This budget is actually less than last year's proposed, so we're going to find out how that happened. And what's going on around the various other activities, including something called Longest Table. The Longest Table was initiated last year. Deriving its name from the fact that they actually had tables lined up end to end, stretched along Park Avenue there in downtown Tallahassee. And at this longest table, there were people like you and me from all parts of the community, with a fairly decent cross representation of ethnicity and age and gender and race and orientation. All of these people who came from various parts of Tallahassee to say, yeah, we are Tallahassee. And the whole point of it, of course, being that in a somewhat symbolic way, but I think also in a contributive way, conversations ensued. And those conversations allowed people to get to know one another a little bit better, to exchange ideas, to exchange stories, to acquaint one another with family histories and localities, you know, neighborhoods coming to neighborhoods and stuff like that. That was a good thing. And in fact, it was celebrated nationally because of its uniqueness and the contributions that came about, the results that came about, in terms of some other community initiatives ideas that were fostered and have been put in front of leadership to try to move the community forward, especially in relation to how we get people to cooperate more, collaborate more, whether it's the improvement of neighborhoods, the reduction of crime, the increase in business productivity, the growth generally of our economic well-being. Yeah, all of that was discussed. And in and of itself, just a good idea. I mean, sometimes it's not about what you get done. It's about just getting to know why you're doing what you do. And motivation comes when we share a thought. We share orientation. We share perspective. We share talents and ideas. And that's kind of what we do here, right? So we're, in our own little way, trying to bring you more and more of these contributors, the people who make Tallahassee what it is. You're one of those people, by the way, just by virtue of your listenership, regardless of whatever else you're doing, you're tuned into this show. God bless you. And hopefully you come away with a better sense of who we are. And I think that's probably, for me, the most interesting part of this journey thus far. I see more of who we really are, personally, who we're discovering ourselves to be. And that has become such an important part of my part here, my role here, that I want to give more and more time to that endeavor. Who are we? What do we sound like? And what are the things we celebrate? What do we invest in? What makes us angry? What do we grieve over? And dear Lord, don't we have a lot in this last week and a half to grieve about? So we'll talk with the mayor about the horrors in Orlando that one upon the other, the loss of this child in Florida, for no other reason that Florida is home to not only two, you know, little kids or visitors who are little kids, but home to alligators. Wow. Don't even know exactly what to say about that other than to say how grievous the whole situation is and how much the country has poured out its heart for this bereaved family. Yep. And that, and of course, the wake of the more horrific slaying of people there in Orlando. We want to hear from Mayor Gillum as he talks with us about his observations and what he's heard, the people that he's talking to, and the responses that we've seen. Of course, because we are all connected more so than we have perhaps ever been in our history as a country, as a culture, as a world, we have opportunity to participate in this broader, more, an invasive sort of conversation. It's like, I saw more people on Facebook this week saying, that's it, I'm blocking all of these people and I'm unfriending all of those people because I just can't take it anymore. I don't want to hear their stupid ideas anymore. Okay. So, but wasn't that sort of the point of us creating this mammoth thing? I mean, you can say it was Mark Zuckerberg's idea, but come on, man. We're the ones that propagate that thing every time we log in. We are the creators. If we are nothing else, we're providing the content. You know, they provided us the skateboard, and wherever we go with that thing is really up to us. Or I often think of it as a big playground, right? And so all the toys are laid out there for us. It's still their playground. But, you know, have fun, boys and girls. Well, apparently it's not so fun when we have to talk about stuff that angers us or grieves us, stuff that we should care about. It should anger us, and we should be sad. God help us if we don't have those kinds of emotions. And beyond that, what we do with those emotions. You know, like the guy who's behind me honking because I haven't floored it to get through the intersection when the light turns green. I mean, come on. You know, take a breath. No, the people on your Facebook page, the guy in traffic, they're not going to agree with you. Let it be, in the words of Paul McCartney. Let it be. Let it rest with you. Let you and I decide, you know what? That hair trigger response, not going to be my style. I'm going to go a different route here. I'm not going to fire back every time somebody says something that I disagree with or that other people might say, you ought to nail that guy. Nah, that's not what we're going to do. What we're going to do is continue to speak what we know to be true, what we believe, what we want, what we care about, right? Jerry Falwell and I had this conversation, believe it or not, years ago when I interviewed Jerry Falwell back in the day. This is 35 years ago. And I was working for a radio station. And he looked at me, he said, some people curse the darkness, other people light a candle. So here's to all of you who are candle lighters this week. Do that for yourself. I'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks.
And I'm Sue Semrau, head coach of Florida State women's basketball team.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help, and the Tallahassee Food Challenge is a great way to do it.
Join us in giving generously. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families.
Look for the Tallahassee Food Challenge truck at your favorite grocery store in the weeks ahead. Your donation will be delivered directly to these charities that do so much to help all of us.
Take the challenge. Fill the truck.
Feed the hungry. Find out more at TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Changing the face of talk radio in Tallahassee. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Time now for this week's Business Spotlight with Miriam Dady, brought to you by pushtheenvelope.biz.
I'm Miriam Dady. Welcome to Tallahassee Business Spotlight. Today is part two of a two-part series. I have Israel Roberson here with me. He's a chief security officer with WebCenter. Thanks for being here again, Israel. We have so much more to talk about. Thanks.
It's my pleasure. We could go on for hours.
I know. There is so much happening and so much evolving on the internet. When we left off last, we were talking about emails, the kind of emails that cause you to panic. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about that.
They're called phishing emails. Phishing, phishing with a PH. So what these emails do is they fish for information, and they continue to fish for this information, and they fish for fear. They prey on the fact that if they scare you, you're not going to think, and you're going to jump. They use company logos, things you're familiar with, and basically all they're trying to do is get information out of you so they can A, take an account over, B, hijack a credit card, or C, get you to send them money. The phishing email scam is something that is a huge problem right now.
Now, we're not talking about the stock email letter coming from Western Africa saying I'm a prince and I need, you know, to be ransomed. It's much more sophisticated than that.
It is way more sophisticated than that. I have seen emails from the biggest companies, one company in particular. They have the logo perfect, and you know, just for heck's sake, let's just say it was let's go something everybody knows, Microsoft. And instead of it coming from Microsoft.com, let's face it, Microsoft's a big company. If they're gonna send you something, it's probably from Microsoft.com. They're not gonna send you something from Microsoft helpalternative.net/. That's not gonna be. And a lot of people just look at that little thing and it says Microsoft.
Gotcha.
Click it. Yeah. Where is it really from? I can tell somebody I'm Microsoft. I could tell somebody I'm Google. I could tell somebody I'm Miriam Dady.
So you're talking about in the URL address.
Mm-hmm. In that address. It says from,
if
and it usually
doesn't
says,
say the company.com, whatever that company is, you might need to double check.
You need to triple check.
Triple check.
If you get something from Apple, it comes from apple.com. They have enough money to send you email from their domain. If it comes from your bank, you have Chase Bank, Wells Fargo, it comes from their domain.com, whatever it might be. I think, you know, Wells Fargo is like wfbank.com. If it's not from that, you need to do your homework before you give anybody information.
Yeah. Yeah, that's excellent. Now, in the URL, and I'm probably showing my internet ignorance here, there's HTTPS, meaning secure.
Yes, actually, no, there is no ignorance there at all. There's HTTP, and then there's HTTPS, and yes, the S stands for secure. And also, in that little area, either to the left or the right of that, you should see a lock. It looks like a padlock. If you see that padlock and you see the S, it is a secure site. You're in a secure area. Doesn't mean you should freely give out a ton of information, gotcha. But you are in a free area. So if you're going to make a purchase, Amazon.com, guilty, I shop there a lot, or any other place where you're going to do a financial transaction, the two things to look out for, you want that S, you want the padlock. That way you know your information is encrypted. It's running 128-bit encryption on your information. Okay. So that means it's safe to put in put in your payment information. So you want to see that S, you want to see that padlock.
Gotcha. Should people save credit card information online?
I would say never.
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 Everybody does things for convenience nowadays.
It is convenient, and it's a 50-50 shot. Most people will never even be bothered with it. Some people will be bothered with it. I would just prefer to give myself a 100% shot of never dealing with it.
Yeah, I know that's true. I want to talk specifically, we didn't get to do this before, about what your business does. What do you offer people?
Okay, so WebCenter, what we mainly offer people, of course, is websites. And we offer them safe, secure websites. The security that we put into a website, you usually can only get if you're a huge corporation and you have a team that is working on websites to keep them safe, secure, and up to date. Fortunately, we have a really good group of guys together. The CEO, his name is Robert Norcross. He's a fantastic web designer, and he's really fantastic all the work he does in keeping things up to date and looking fantastic. We have people that work on these websites all the time. But we also put security. It's our thing. It's what we do. Most small companies can't afford security. So what we offer is antivirus on all of our websites. Yes, 30,000 websites get infected every day by viruses.
Wow.
It's no joke. It happens. Your website needs antivirus. We scan and remove for malware. It's a 24/7 thing. That's not something we do every now and again because it has to be constantly in motion. We brute force attack our own websites. We try to tear down our own administrative passwords. We have one person that has them, and the rest of us are constantly guessing, trying to get in, trying to break in, because we want to keep our sites secure.
Yeah.
We want them to be safe. We have code change detection. We have scanners that scan all of our websites. If anything has changed, if any code has changed, or if anything is put in there that is malicious, it alerts us. It lets us know. One thing we understand is we can't stop an attack. We can't stop attackers from trying. It's going to happen.
Right.
But what we can do is respond to it. How well are you going to respond to it? What are you going to do when you respond to it? What plan do you have in place to respond to it? So that's the practices we're going through. Most small companies can't afford that. That's a pretty expensive thing to have in place.
Well, they would need an entire department
exactly
to do that 24/7, and you just take that off of their shoulders. I think about all the people I know that just go to Office Depot or Staples and they buy something that says, you know, build your own website, and they're just out there alone, right? They're just so vulnerable to whatever is out there.
Well, I know. See, as at WebCenter, one of the things we want everybody to have that secure website. We want the small guy to have that secure website. Mm-hmm. And not just secure, but a personal website. Mm-hmm. When somebody goes to your website, you want it to be personable. When you have a website that you've pre-built and it's a prefab thing, and then there's advertisements all over it, and they're trying to read about your business, they're trying to read about your company, and the banner comes flying across and flicker.
Right.
It makes your website unenjoyable.
Yeah.
And so now the small business guy is suffering because nobody wants to deal with the banner ads and all the stuff that's on your website. Let's be honest, people judge you and your business by your website. If you have a professional looking website, if you have a secure website, they're going to take notice. It's going to speak highly of your company.
It really makes a huge difference. It
makes a big difference. And that's what we want the little guy to have that. It's a big cost if you try to go about it yourself, you try to make it in-house. So we're trying to make that possible for everybody.
I think everybody ought to reach out to you. I'm going to just say that right now. And if you're listening right now, if you want to reach out to Israel, you can find him at webcenterme.com. Center is spelled C-E-N-T-R-E, and then it's M-I.com. His phone number, if you've got a pencil handy, it's 352-281-3302. Israel, thanks for being here once again.
Hey, thanks for having me. We appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us for Tallahassee Business Spotlight. I'm Miriam Dady.
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. You know, the fact that we keep discovering people around this town who bring us such amazing stories, whose roots, some of them go back generations. People like Gerald Tooks, whose family has been part of the Tallahassee fabric, the landscape for generations. And that's not an exaggeration. So we invited Gerald to come and talk to us today. How are you, sir?
Great, Brian. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you with us because, you know, it's guys like you and women who bring us not just the stories, but an insight and understanding.
Sure.
One of the subparts, I think, the subtext for this show is a matter of self-discovery. It's a matter of us finding who we really are.
Absolutely.
Curious to me that has become more and more our mission here.
Uh-huh.
You know, because when I started this, the idea was just, oh, you know, there's a lot of cool people doing really cool things.
Right.
But the further we go, the further we discover that not only is Tallahassee changing, we're having to embrace where we are right now.
Sure.
And where that's come from.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're a fellow who brings to us this layer, I guess, or this perspective mm-hmm. of Tallahassee's history that is remarkable because the Tooks name goes back for some time. Tell us about your family history.
Well, I guess it could probably go back to, you know, my grandfather that I did not know. Mm-hmm. He actually passed away long before I was even a thought. My father was a freshman in college, and he was a cook for several governors up until Governor Collins took office. But he also cooked for the Phipps plantation. And, you know, he married my grandmother, which they, you know, had two kids, my father and my aunt, his sister, Dolores. And, you know, my grandfather was a hardworking guy. You know, he loved to do what he did, cooking. And my father, you know, took care of him at, you know, when he got when he was sick and worked two jobs and was in school. And same thing with my aunt, you know, and my grandmother. So my grandmother was the founder of Bond School.
Really?
Yep. And then, you know, they had a home, which is called the Tooks Hotel. It's on the National Historic Registry.
And where is that located?
It's on Virginia Street here in Tallahassee, 412 West Virginia Street. And during that time, it was a hotel for, you know, blacks who come into town, and they had to have a place to stay. So you had people like James Baldwin stay there. You had Lou Rawls stay there. You had Hattie McDaniels to stay there. You know, so from that standpoint, that's why it became sort of a national treasure here in Tallahassee. And my grandmother went on to become, you know, a teacher over in Gadsden County. My father was a school principal who was probably the youngest at that time as a principal. He was about 24 years old when he became a school principal. Hmm. When he married my mom, you know, was in education. She taught for 35 years at Mims Middle School. My dad was a school principal at an old rural school called Barrel Hill, which is out in the Cheers community. He then moved into town at the time it was called Southwest Elementary, but it's Pine View School today. But it was Pine View when he became principal. I actually started going to school there in third grade, which is when he transferred into town, third and fourth grade. And then we had, you know, integration, and we developed some new schools in town. We used to call them new school A, B, C, D, all the way to F, I believe it was. And that was, I can't remember them all, but I the one that I attended was Oak Ridge.
Look at that.
And in fifth grade.
So they didn't have names for them yet. They just had to give them an alpha designation
exactly.
to tell them apart.
Exactly. Exactly. It didn't take long for them to kind of change the name. But, originally it was New School C. That's where you're going.
Yeah, putting them up so fast.
Yeah. So that's sort of the backdrop of my family in terms of the history.
When you look at that history for you as a family, mm-hmm. and you look at the historic changes that have occurred over the last 70 years, we'll say. Mm-hmm. So going back to those times when segregation was very hard, very real.
Right.
And then through the period of the Civil Rights Movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Personally, how did that play into your own family history? Were your family members involved in civil rights activities, or is that sort of a silly question? Maybe everybody was,
well,
or should have been.
Well, I think they were. You know, because of the fact that they lived it. You know, my mom's from St. Augustine.
Yeah.
So, although she was here in school, her sister, her youngest sister, was tied into the civil rights movement in St. Augustine with all the stuff that was going on during that time. And St. Augustine sort of became a battleground for civil rights. They were, you know,
In one way or another.
It affected us.
I see. When you think of your own lifetime,
mm-hmm.
and you have, for your contribution to Tallahassee, you've been an entrepreneur in your own right. Mm-hmm. You have this company now that offers aerial photography.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that company.
So... It's interesting the way that came about. The short story is that I was on the beach in Destin, Florida, shooting a video. And I thought, man, it'd be nice to capture this view aerial. And the guys that I was with thought, what do you mean? You mean like a helicopter? I said, no, they have these unmanned aerial vehicles that you can buy now with a camera on it and capture footage. And they thought I was crazy. And eventually, I maybe 3-4 months after that, I bought one and flew it in my backyard. And I started, you know, taking photos and videos and putting them together. And a few folks saw them. And I was working for a production company at the time, Impact Visual Media. Mm. And, you know, we talked about it. We used it a little bit. And then, of course, regulations change. Mm. And
Because of 9/11 or no?
No. It actually changed. It actually changed because of the fact that maybe the FAA said, wait a minute, we got to get a grip on this.
Technology's advancing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And consumers are getting their hands on this.
I see.
And they're flying into commercial airspace, and we got to control this some kind of way.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I wanted to make sure that I kind of stayed on top of that. Well, fast forward to January of this year, like I said, I've been doing it for a while. I got my FAA exemption 333 last summer. And I kind of quietly started doing some things, not really trying to seek publicity or anything like that. But if somebody said, hey, can you get me some aerial shots? Sure. And, you know, January, I was like, OK, I got to do this company, and I got to do it right. And but I, you know, I offer just more than just the aerial perspective of it. There's the consulting part of it. There's the education part of it. And then I stuck to my roots of doing other kind of production, whether it's just regular video production as well as audio production.
Wow. Folks, we're talking with Gerald Tukes, one of the players in this town that has contributed at a number of levels, his family having some pretty deep roots here, and in their own way have contributed sizably to our welfare. A pleasure to have you with us, learning about his business, his creativity, and the investment that he's made in this company that does aerial photography. What's the name of the company?
It's named after me. It's Gerald Tukes Aerial Productions.
Simple enough. So if I want to hire you, I can find you that way.
Absolutely.
Okay, folks. Stay with me. We've got more coming up. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny is here every Saturday morning. You can find us online at TallahasseeTalks.com. We'll be right back.
My dog was in bad shape, and I was scared. I had never seen her so sick, and my mind was racing. What to do? Who to call? I mean, I raised her from a puppy. She's like my best friend. A few years ago, she developed diabetes, and I've been following her daily regimen carefully. But that morning, something just wasn't right. She could barely move, and I thought, I'm losing my dog. I called a friend, and he said, call Dr. Pliskin. So I called Mahan Animal Clinic. They put me through immediately, and Dr. Pliskin said to get her there right away. Turns out, her blood sugar had dropped dramatically, but he knew exactly what to do. I guess you know. There's no other place I would go knowing that Mahan Animal Clinic and Dr. Pliskin are there for me and Aerith.
Special people and special care for those you love. Mahan Animal Clinic on Mahan Drive near Costco. On the web at mahananimalclinic.com or call 402-0557.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back talking with Gerald Tukes, one of the folks who we have discovered has all of this contribution to Tallahassee and its history and the current scene with a company he calls Gerald Tukes
Aerial Productions.
Yeah, so a videographer, photographer, and an audio producer. You work in, you've been in radio for, I don't know, a couple of lifetimes, it feels like, right? How long were you in radio broadcasting?
I was in radio for about 8 years. Mm. Yeah, 8 years.
And were you on the, were you in front of the mic or were you behind the board? Or did you do both?
I did both, actually. Yeah. I did both. Interesting how that started out. So, you know, we previously talked about my parents and their education.
Yeah.
Well, my father never really wanted to be, you know, an educator per se. Back during that time, it was not many options for him. He really wanted to go in business, and eventually he did. He didn't retire from the school system. He decided, well, I think I'm going to go into business, which he did. He was a he's one of, if I believe, let me just safely say that he was one of the first black realtors in Tallahassee.
Okay.
And he trained a lot of realtors up under him who eventually became brokers.
And this would have been in the 50s, 60s?
No, this was in 1973. 73. Had a company called J&T Properties that was located on Brevard Street.
I remember, yeah.
And so at that time, around 74, the old mayor Ford, James Ford, was, you know, wanted to have a radio station, a black radio station, because we didn't have one at that time.
Yeah.
And it was located in my father's building.
Huh.
And, you know, I was, that piqued my curiosity right there. Yeah. I had a key to the building. I sneak in, watch Joe Bullitt do his thing. He and I became really good friends.
Good old Joe.
He took me under his wings, and eventually, years later, I had a whole bunch of equipment, collected records, and doing mixes, and that's
how
I got
it. Was that WANM?
That's correct. Yeah. WANM AM.
Yeah, brother.
Yep. So
all of us old radio hacks, man.
Absolutely.
We're right there with you.
Absolutely.
That's cool stuff.
So that started my radio career, and you know, as I moved along with Joe, basically assisting him a lot. I worked midday. I worked afternoon. When he left radio.
The operative word there is
absolutely
worked.
I worked. Eventually, I moved into the program director's position.
Yeah, that's very cool. 78, I came to Tallahassee and went to work for WCVC Radio.
I remember.
Within the first month, I think, I got to town and didn't have a car. So I had to ride my 10-speed bike from FSU campus out to John Knox Road and Henderson Road. Out there behind what is now the center of Tallahassee.
Exactly.
Tallahassee Mall in those days. Holy smokes, 98 degrees on a 10-speed bike for, I don't know, 10 miles.
That's crazy.
I was a mess. But they did hire me that day and began to work. And you say, you know, people think about, well, radio is just so fun. And yeah, well, brother, it's a lot of work. Do you ever have any interest in getting back into radio at any point? Or is that ancient history now? Or what do you think?
Well, I did. And you know, I always said that because I saw the landscape of radio change.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought the next time I get in radio, I was going to own it.
Yeah.
And as technology has changed, you know, with podcasting and you starting your own station online.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
I do sort of a radio show now that's not, talk radio, it's just music intensive.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a weekly little
podcast. I love that. I've listened. It's a good deal.
Thank you.
In fact, we did just the same thing here. We said we need a radio station that plays all local musicians all the time. So Moose Magnificat was our idea that is still in its infancy. It's only been out there about a year. But man, already people have latched onto that.
Absolutely.
They really like the idea that they can hear original music from local artists. If you think about those changes that have happened even the last, let's say, 15, 20 years, and we talk a lot about the new Tallahassee, does it feel new to you?
Doesn't feel new. What it feels to me is that it has changed with the times. Mm. You know, kind of, you know, we're in a different phase of how we interact, you know, how we communicate with one another. Mm. You know, I think one of the things that we had strong neighborhoods then. Mm. I'm not sure, and I don't want to speak bad of it. I'm not sure if we still have that strong neighborhood like we used to.
Yeah.
Because of the change, you know, there's so many, you know, people who are now moving to Tallahassee for various reasons. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are starting to stay, you know, people are graduating from colleges and they decide, hey, you know, Tallahassee is a great town to raise a family, which it is. Mm-hmm. And so they're bringing an element of change to it as well.
Mm. And with that, do you think that we find ourselves being changed, we're being pushed, or is it coming from more on the side of desiring other things to happen? I mean, how does it feel to you? Is it imposed change, or is it organic, I guess I'd say?
I see it more organic.
Yeah.
Because I think what I see is there's still some resistance.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to change. But there's also an element that's kind of growing, you know, organically as people are starting to say, hey, you know, did you know about this? Did you know about that? And say, no, I didn't know about that. But, you know, you start discovering it yourself.
And you and I are an example of that.
Exactly.
And folks, I have to tell you, when Gerald and I first started chatting here a while back, we discovered that we had this sort of parallel history, both of us having spent many years in broadcasting, radio, local, both of us in business, but we hadn't met each other. And
correct.
Then because of our friend Vincent Hunt,
right,
and you got involved with his program, Creators Camp,
yep,
doing the aerial work that you do with unmanned vehicles,
mm-hmm,
well, then here comes that intersection.
Exactly.
So that's pointing to what you're talking about.
The organic connections.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I love the fact that I'm watching these things change and grow and, you know, naturally, as opposed to some sort of forced, you know, interaction. Sometimes when you, you know, try to force something into it just doesn't work out. I've connected with a lot of UAV pilots that way. I've made most of my contacts and business opportunities through Instagram. Go figure.
Who knew?
Go figure.
I'm trying to get into the Snapchat thing, but I haven't figured that part.
Me either. I don't even have a Snapchat account.
Okay. Folks, Gerald Tukes is our guest this morning, a longtime Tallahassee family, the Tukes Hotel on the National Historic Register. And Gerald, no doubt you are going to be among those in your family who continue to make a sizable contribution. His company, Gerald Tukes Aerial Productions, and our guest this morning. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you for having me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be here. Stay with me, coming up the top of the hour, and we'll be back with more.
I take care of the whole person, interweaved throughout our office visits, if we're talking about a general medical office visit.
Right.
I'm counseling patients on how to structure their life.
Dr. Mignon talking about helping you maintain your health.
If you're overdoing things and patients walk in and say, oh my gosh, I feel so stressed out, or even young people, a 16-year-old could feel stressed out. And what does that really mean? I mean, people throw that term around, but I'm feeling overwhelmed. I don't have any time for myself. I'm not sleeping well. I'm exhausted when I wake up in the morning. Well, what are we going to do? So to help people adjust their mind or their thinking or their perception and their plan to change that.
Your family, your health, your doctor. Dr. Mignon with Health and Wellness Centers of North Florida. Call or click 850-656-2006 or TallahasseeHealthandWellness.com.
The most talked about topics in town. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are back after having been with you for the first hour. Our new friend, Gerald Tukes, talking about old time, new time Tallahassee. His work as a professional, a commercial drone pilot, and his company, Gerald Tukes Aerial Productions. Wow. If you missed that, by the way, if you've missed that or any of our lovely broadcasts, you can always find them online. You know that, right? TallahasseeTalks.com. And our associate producer, Jenny, has done such a fabulous job of late trying to make that even easier for guys like me on our mobile devices and or our computers, where you can subscribe to the podcast if you have an iPhone or an Android. So we got it working both ways. If you want to just listen from our archive, you can do that. We have all those shows up there for you. There's a neat little search engine. So if you want to search Gillum, you can bring up those conversations we've had with Mayor Gillum, like we are about to have today. So there you go. So, Gerald Tukes, thank you for your contribution to today's broadcast. That's a guy we're going to have come back. Do you know that he has this remarkable history in audio production, records that he's made with no less than Janet Jackson? Yeah, he was with A&M Records. We didn't even get to talk about that. Yeah, not enough time in the day, I guess, or at least within the show. But he's agreed. He's going to come back. We're going to catch up on more of his very interesting career. Broadcaster, record producer, longtime Tallahassee, old Tallahassee family, the Tukes House on the National Historic Register. Wow. Yeah, the Tukes Hotel, known to many for its role. And his family contributing to Tallahassee through education, particularly. I think he said his mom, or was it his mom or his grandmother, that founded Bond Elementary School. Remarkable. So, yeah, we like celebrating those contributions and those people who contribute to our welfare and to the welfare of specific groups. There are people who are benefited because they are a part of keeping us focused on the stuff that's most important. And, of course, when you look at what's up ahead, you can think about people who not only are involved in a more publicized way, people like Mayor Andrew Gillum, I mean, of course, but people who are backstage, you know, behind the scenes, working diligently to create, to direct, to administer, to develop, to encourage. And if you're one of those people today, I want to encourage you to keep on keeping on. Keep doing what you do best. And it's a conversation that I want to have with Vincent Hunt. You know, Vincent is a longtime friend of the show and a contributor in his own right. Remarkable inventor, innovator, and entrepreneur, we'll say, but more so, he's a human developer. You know, he's a software guy, but his passion is serving people, especially young people. And so his Creators Camp program and project is laudable. And we're going to get Vincent in here, I think, next week. We'll talk about that. But in my conversations with him, you know, it's remarkable to find people who just continue to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And we talked a little bit about how much our way of life is changing around this idea that you don't wait for somebody else to give you permission. You don't wait for somebody else to come and fund your vision. You start. You look at what you have in front of you. You look at those means you have at your disposal, and it may not be much. But you are insistent about pursuing the work that you are called to do. One of my favorite films, of course, is Apollo 13. And that scene in which these aerospace engineers are tasked with having to solve an unforeseen problem. They've got three men in a space capsule that are going to die if they don't figure out this problem, and in short order. I mean, they don't have a long time here. So they've got to figure out how to make this square peg fit into a round hole using only those elements, those implements, those pieces of the puzzle that those men in that space capsule happen to have at their disposal, right? So you remember the scene. They dump everything out on the table. If you've not seen this, you need to do this for yourself. And go about solving the problem. And they did. And they weren't allowed to say, well, but we don't have this. They weren't allowed to consider, well, if we only had that. They had to work with what was right in front of them. So what do you have in your hands? What do you have in your mind? What do you have in your heart? Who are the people that agree with you? And if you don't find any of those people who agree with you, what are you willing to do to advance your contribution? Okay? So a friend of mine was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis about 10 years ago. She is now in her early 60s. Right. So for the last 10 years, she has had to deal with this in her life. And she deals with it by volunteering her time among those who are even more afflicted than she is in various ways. Some that are dealing with emotional or mental disorders, some who are dealing with a physical ailment, some who are dealing with disabilities of various kinds, physical disabilities. She volunteers her time doing what? Having conversations with them, helping them balance their checkbook, deciding what piece of clothing they want to purchase this week at that clothing store, or, you know, where they're going to spend some time with their grandchildren when they come to town. Whatever the conversation is, her contribution is to be connected to them. She doesn't have the ability to drive, so she gets a ride, or she takes the bus, or she walks. Folks, you and I know this. If we don't know it by now, we can look around us and say, look at what he is doing. Look at what she is doing with what means she or he has at their disposal, with what opportunities they've been given. So today is a show about opportunity. It's an opportunity for us to grieve with our neighbors to the south. It's an opportunity for us to continue conversations with one another around the things that are not easy to talk about, even with something like the longest table that the mayor's office in Village Square and KCCI have helped us bring about. And it's the conversation that you and I are going to have here today. That's why I'm glad that you're a part of it, and I encourage you to stay with me. I should take a moment here to say thanks to all of our many sponsors, the people who make the broadcast possible. And I want to remind you that if you have a topic, a guest you'd like us to consider, simple enough, email us topics@TallahasseeTalks.com. You'll find us on the web at TallahasseeTalks.com anytime that you're ready to have a conversation.
Folks, there are four ways to shine in life, and Merry Maids has it all going on. Experience, reliability, thoroughness, and professionalism. And that's why we rely on Merry Maids right here at our studios. They are proficient, and they are reliable. And I want to tell you, when I come into the office and I find the studio fresh and clean, it's a great feeling. And the neat thing about it is they get into all the details that I probably would overlook. You know, I mean, but I want to tell you something else. As a new customer, when you sign up for their 24 weekly or biweekly cleanings, on your first cleaning, you're going to save up to $400 because they'll spend that first cleaning doing the extra deep cleaning that you probably would do if you wanted to do it yourself, but you don't have to. You can call Merry Maids. It's the best thing to do. And let me tell you something. Here's another special offer. You're going to save yourself 10% on that first call just by mentioning Tallahassee Talks when you call. Would you do that for me? Call Merry Maids this week. Here's the number, 386-2205, and tell them, I heard you're out on Tallahassee Talks, and I'm ready to receive 10% discount on my service. They'll do it for you. They're right here in Tallahassee. You can go online at merrymaids.com.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, our dear friend and the friend to Tallahassee, the Honorable Mayor Andrew Gillum is our guest. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Brian. Thanks so much for having me again.
You're back again.
I'm back again. Last time we were both on satellite location,
goodness,
right?
How fun that was to be at Chain of Parks Art Festival. You were such a good sport about that whole thing, too.
Well, you were demonstrating the complexity under which you can produce these shows. It was well done.
I can assure you, I'm the most mystified of all that we can actually pull this off from week
well
to week.
Done.
Because consider who you're dealing with here.
Well, now that you've shown the community you can do that, know that there'll be future opportunities.
We hope that we can be of further service. It is certainly our endeavor to provide folks like you and all of us then an opportunity to better understand who we are, right? So here you come to us in a leadership capacity, a significant role for us as mayor of Tallahassee, and prior to that, serving on the city commission, not necessarily from a long time, you know, generation after generation perspective, effectively a South Florida guy who came up here and stayed and liked what we had going on.
That's
and
right.
Said, hey, I want to be part of this. That's the story that we hope everybody is starting to get a hold of.
Yeah, right? And experiment with. And, you know, for a long time, a lot of folks who came to this community originally came attending, you know, Florida State University or Florida A&M and sort of got entrapped by an opportunity. And 30, 40 years later, they're saying they're native Tallahasseans is what it feels like. And so I'm happy to be part of, you know, sort of this generation's crop that say, man, you know what? I love where I live. I don't have to go anyplace else to get any better and get it here.
It's striking to me that as these changes occur and the in-migration has continued, people like Gerald Tooks, who is also a guest this week, his family goes back several generations.
That's right.
Right. And he talked about the old days when neighborhoods seemed to be a bit more solid. Mm-hmm, you know, they were more connected.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that's good and bad, isn't it? Because if you listen to the works of Richard Florida, and he says, you know, you guys, you got a lot of good stuff going on, but you don't know one another.
Mm-hmm,
you're segregated.
Mm-hmm,
you're separated into these various quadrants or even other sectors of the community. And Gerald says, you know, that's a good point because I never really went beyond my own neighborhood.
Yeah, that's right.
Technology has helped us.
Yeah.
And now the mayor's office, along with Village Square, comes along and says, hey, we got an idea.
Yeah.
Let's all sit down and have a snack.
That's right.
Let's all have a meal together, which, of course, is a bit of a metaphor, but it's also real.
That's right.
Because you're hosting this longest table. Tell us about longest table.
Yeah. So, I mean, as you know, and I know that this stuff happens rather undeliberately, right? These separations that occur in communities that none of us actively, you know, necessarily go out
not
to seek.
Design.
How do I know? How do I avoid people who are different than me? I don't think that's the intention, but, you know, based off of what we earn, maybe where we grew up, maybe the school system that we want our kids to, you know, to enter into.
May I say go Trojans, by the way?
Oh, you have it. You get to express preference. I love them all. But all those conditions lead to, you know, what we have today, which are relatively homogeneous, if not by race, certainly by class and income, communities that have emerged with some few exceptions. And so we've tried to, through an extensive partnership with folks at the Village Square and Leadership Tallahassee and various departments within the city and the county government, have really strove to try to figure out, all right, what are some ways in which we can begin to close this gap?
We started
it off last year, not just with the longest table, with our Tallahassee Forward summit that used to be referred to as the Mayor's Summit on Race.
Right.
And, you know, we wanted to change that name and let people feel sort of enhammered by some of what comes with the term race.
Uh-huh.
And so I said, let's talk about what it looks like to move the community forward.
Right.
And part of moving this community forward is breaking down the silos that exist and keep us from being in community with one another.
Yeah.
And from that, we then hosted last year in the fall a longest table where we shut down Park Avenue and built an uninterrupted dinner table that sat a little over 400 residents from all parts of our city, women, men, teens, full-fledged adults, elderly, black, white, Asian, Latino, you name it. It was represented there. And we, you know, a little bit of a social experiment. We wanted to make sure that the table did represent this community's diversity.
An experiment that ended up reaching a national audience.
For sure.
You got some national press.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
We got national press. We also were fortunate enough to get a national grant from the Knight Foundation. We were one of 30 communities that they awarded these innovation grants to because of the longest table. They were very intrigued by what we accomplished. But we've also been reached out to from folks from Ferguson, Missouri, from the state of Indiana, a statewide office holder there in Indiana, Baltimore, cities around Gainesville. I was talking to Mayor Poe, who sent me a note just the other day. Can I get the toolkit that you're using to do these dinners? But it's an inspiring idea because this is
phrase,
that's
it?
These are challenges that exist in every community all across the country, and folks are just trying to figure out how it is we do
that
this
now.
And
what has transpired in the last year or 2 years, communities around the country. I mean, I grew up in the 60s. I remember. And I even thought about it this morning. The only difference is that when my dad would scream at the TV would not scream back at him. That isn't the way it is anymore.
Yeah.
So when you look at the transcriptions of Facebook and Twitter, and you realize, man, there's a lot of disharmony, and people have really just thrown off the gloves here.
The Band-Aid has been ripped off.
Goodness.
And not slowly. And you know, I don't as much have an issue with people becoming loud and more unapologetic about reflecting what their lived experience mm-hmm. is. And that's what a lot of this is. People are reflecting the tension that exists in the lives that they live, be it LGBT individuals, women, African Americans, poor black and brown people, mm-hmm. folks who are targeted or feel that they are targeted by an unjust criminal justice, whatever that looks like. We're hearing in very direct and unapologetic ways the tensions and the frustration of that lived experience. What we have to do, though, responsible communities, is figure out ways to channel that such that it can be constructive, that it allows people to hear you and not go to their corners, that it opens up dialogue, and hopefully by dialogue, maybe disagreements, but also maybe understanding. Mm-hmm. And maybe instead of being more judging, we'll choose to be more curious about other people's experiences.
Talking with Mayor Andrew Gillum, he is our guest, and you are in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Stay with me.
I take care of the whole person, interweaved throughout our office visits, yeah. if we're talking about a general medical office visit.
Right, right.
I'm counseling patients on how to structure their life.
Dr. Mignon talking about helping you maintain your health.
If you're overdoing things and patients walk in and say, oh my gosh, I feel so stressed out, or even young people, a 16-year-old could feel stressed out. And what does that really mean? I mean, people throw that term around, but I'm feeling overwhelmed. I don't have any time for myself. I'm not sleeping well. I'm exhausted when I wake up in the morning. Well, what are we going to do? So to help people adjust their mind or their thinking or their perception and their plan to change that.
Your family, your health, your doctor. Dr. Mignon with Health and Wellness Centers of North Florida. Call or click 850-656-2006 or TallahasseeHealthandWellness.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back. We're talking with the Honorable Mayor Andrew Gillum. Is that correct? Are you supposed to say the Honorable Mayor?
You could say Andrew, actually.
when it comes down to it, this whole longest table effort, and we should credit the works of Village Square and many organizations that are allied in this effort, the conversations, it seems to me, often get relegated to a more narrow view. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean that you see a lot of the same players showing up over and over and over again. One of the things I love about you being with us on this show is that we really get to hear an opportunity for us to get involved.
That's right.
That we might not otherwise think we have.
That's right.
So if you don't show up at a Village Square meeting, okay, well, where can you go?
That's right.
Well, this longest table thing. Now, the one that's about to happen.
Next week, Sunday, the
26th. Right? That's happening all over town.
In fact,
you're not even doing the downtown parks thing this time.
Not this time.
So this time it's all over town.
Intimate tables all over this community.
Dinners.
That's right.
And then how will we find out what happened?
Well, we're encouraging folks to use social media heavily to reflect what their experiences are. We hope some people will write about it. We're capturing some of it on video. But we're leaving it up to each house to sort of treat their conversations with respect.
I know we're hosting a table.
I love that, Brian.
And
I love that.
You know what? We talked about recording our conversations.
I love that.
And then making that recording available.
Yeah.
So I got to talk with my peeps about
yeah.
make that happen.
Listen, I love that. I encourage it wholeheartedly. And we're limited
in
how much.
I'll just message you on Facebook.
You can send it there too. Yeah. And I hope you'll share it with, with others, and I'm encouraging folks. Right now, Brian, we've got, nearly 600 individuals that will be dispersed all
That's
around our community.
Pretty encouraging.
Yeah. At tables of 6 to 8 people. Having dinner, breaking bread together. We say supper, by the way, because we want you there at 5:30 on time and want you out of there by 7:30.
Yeah, it's supper time.
Supper time.
Got that.
And are giving some guidance to each host around how we hope it may develop. But you know what? Ultimately, we are trusting people to do what people do when they connect, which is allow the authenticity of the moment to take over.
Right. I love that here. I have to say, in the face of what tragedies we have witnessed just in this last couple of weeks, I think we're all just a bit shell-shocked at this point.
Yeah.
And it's almost that whole bereavement process, you know, where at first you're angry.
Yes.
And then you're trying to negotiate and barter and beg and borrow and steal. Is there any way we could? And then you're just down to feeling sad and depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And now we kind of come back and say, Mayor,
what's the action?
What can we do?
What's the action?
What's your take on the whole mess of it?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I mean, all of our hearts are, you know, truly, this for me is not a made-up emotion. Mm-hmm. Orlando is right up the street from us, right?
Sure.
So many young people come to this community from Orlando to attend FAMU, FSU, and TCC. Yeah. There are full-fledged adults in this community who were born there, went to high school, and are living here. But forgiving all of that, if you just look at it at the very basic level of humanity, none of us can imagine what took place and what the wreckage that is left, most directly for the families, then for the extended community, and then obviously for the rest of us, who I don't know by name these individuals. I've read about them. I've been moved to tears reading their stories and what their friends and loved ones have had to say about them. I've been, just frankly upset about some of the debate around what do you call this, and this is that, and the third, and at its most basic fundamental level, we call it a tragedy that 40, nine people, unsuspecting, lost their lives for no other reason than because of who they are.
It's interesting, the tragedy of it, the horror of it, the loss of life, we would easily associate with any mass death. We'll talk about an airliner going down.
Sure.
Car accidents, but there's another element here, and that was that we had an individual who deliberately went out of his way planned, apparently,
that's right.
by the most recent investigation to do this for some time.
That's right.
So the airline did not plan to kill people.
No.
But in fact, this gentleman decided, or person decided, that this was his...
Yeah.
So
horror of it, right? Like you hear some of the personal testimonies of the young woman in the bathroom, and she is, as he aims his weapon at them, she's shielded by the guy behind her. He ends up dead. She comes out alive. Can you imagine slain bodies all over this place, and to now live to tell about what that horroring and harrowing experience
was? What do you think is more horrifying or more disturbing? The fact that it happened, and in and of itself is that. But then you have this individual who perpetrated the act, and that's where we start arguing about motivation and cause and availability and the weaponry and all that.
Yeah,
which is it that is
well?
More
disturbing? For me, I am obviously disturbed by the act and the actions of this individual, but I'm also disturbed by the climate that is. It seems in this political climate increasingly being created that allows us to otherize people, that allows us to point a finger at certain communities that are different than ourselves and to treat them as less than human. This man had made up in his mind specifically that the gay community, the LGBT community, were deserving of such horror. And to put it quite frankly, that they were deserving of death, and that doesn't just arrive in a person's spirit overnight. That is, to me, long-term systemic harboring of hate that is then manifests in this kind of action. And what we have to be careful about as a community, from this example and from plenty others, we can go to Mother Emanuel Church. We can go to what happens, frankly, too often than not, outside of Planned Parenthood locations. We can go to what happened in movie theaters and Sandy Hook Elementary School, that as a community, when we're trying to make sense of these things, we go to the individual and we try to figure out what were the motivations of that individual, rather than pulling back and looking at what kind of community and culture are we creating that perpetuates and sets the table for people to do really, really bad and heinous things. Mm-hmm. Words are powerful, and we have to be careful, and we have to govern our language, our words, and the emotions that they evoke in people, so that we don't have these kinds of continuous tragedies.
Yeah, for me, the debate personally, as I reflected on it, was trying to decide whether he was motivated individually.
Yeah.
Whether, in fact, he was drawing motivation from his orientation as a Muslim. And even in watching the Kelly files this last couple of weeks, mm-hmm. Or even this conversation that has emerged about whether, in fact, seeing another class of people, mm-hmm. whether it's gender or
race,
or if it's race,
yeah,
or
sure.
orientation. You know, it'd be quick to say that here as a Christian, I look at it and say, well, you know, certainly the Bible doesn't teach us to hate our enemies.
Sure.
But I have to stop and realize there are many historically and even now who have justified mm-hmm. their own hateful mm-hmm. thinking
sure.
within their
framework.
Position as a Christian.
Yeah, their framework
right?
of religion,
so,
right.
Yeah, so we're going to defend against the papacy, or we're going to defend against communism
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah.
But we do that from a religious, we'll say,
yeah. Yeah.
point of view.
Yeah, and that tension, that conflict, basing of these heinous actions off of a religious belief are as old as life itself.
Yeah.
It has been a great divide over the course of our world's history, not just our nation's, but our world's history. And the truth is, if you were to listen to modern day interpretations of some of these things, whether it's Islam or Christianity, those folks would say that they are acting outside of the mm-hmm. faith, outside of the traditions of that faith. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think the motivations around either his association with terrorist groups or his fascination with terrorist groups, or whether he felt compelled to do this based off of some other warped impression or
psychology,
yeah, you never know, because you know there's
disability.
Other reporting that this may have been an act of self-hate,
yeah,
as he struggled with
yeah.
his own identity,
yeah.
You know, and we may not ever know, but I think the part that we can have control over is turning down the temperature when we sense the temperature getting too high on the kind of rhetoric that, again, allows us to other people, because it has a consequence. And it can be a very dangerous and, in some cases, tragically deadly consequences. Mm.
Talking about all of these things related to our own town here in Tallahassee, when I think of that, I realize, you know, we're not alien to such things, and
sure.
we're certainly not immune to that
sure.
as a possibility, which is
sure.
a
no
disturbing
community
thought.
Is. That's right.
But nonetheless, we are fortunate. We have Mayor Andrew Gillum, our guest this morning, as we go through these murky waters together. You stay with me. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be right back.
Hello, brothers and sisters in Radio Land. This is blues guitarist Jerry Thigpen. Don't you move, because this is Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we're back and we're talking with Mayor Andrew Gillum. Man, we've covered some pretty
heavy
stuff.
Yeah.
And as we look forward now into the next chapter of Tallahassee's marvelous growth and development and all that comes about it, somebody has to pay for all this stuff.
Sure.
And so it falls to you, sir, to come back to us with a budget.
Yeah.
And that was announced recently. So
yeah.
you have your proposed, what would amount to the 2017,
yes.
16-17, or how does that work?
16-17.
17, yeah, yeah. So let's see. The numbers were somewhere around $702 million.
Yep,
something like that.
Yep,
chump change. Right.
Yep. Well, chump change, huh? I've never seen a check that big. Yes.
Hard to imagine that a tiny little town such as ours could spend that much money.
Yeah.
In a year's time.
Well, I tell you, it's big. Now, we'll for the sake of full transparency, the about $600 million of that. Plus is our electric utility and other utilities. So those are in many ways kind of sort of fixed costs. But the piece of the budget that we do get to work with that sort of provides our police and parks and recreation and human resources and streets drainage and all that good stuff is the piece that, you know, that is usually under most debate when we end up doing the budget cycle. And yes, the manager's proposed budget did come out this week. I'm still making my way through each line of it to best understand it. We actually have a budget meeting next week, a public forum next week at 6 p.m., where we're inviting the public to come in to give us additional feedback.
What day is that next week? Is it
will be what day of the week is that? It's the Wednesday, and it would be the 23rd?
So it would be this coming Wednesday.
22nd. All right. Yeah.
Thank you, Jamie.
Yes, Jamie.
Jamie's off mic, but we let him stay in the studio because he's a nice man. And
he's
And he works hard, and he would feel badly if we didn't. We made him sit out in the waiting area. He would be sad.
He's had worse.
And he might, yes, right?
Yeah, like parade walking in 100-degree heat, yes.
So thank you for that help, Jamie.
Yeah, indeed. But and we want to, so you know, we've done a public survey.
What is it, the 22nd? 22nd, okay.
And obviously, even after that, we've got two additional public hearings that will be scheduled when we get back from break in August for the public to continue to give us feedback. And obviously, our email addresses always work, and there are some people who use them more than others. I want to encourage folks, obviously, if they've got feedback, questions, thoughts, andrew.gillum at talgov.com or any of your commissioners. It's their first period last name at talgov.com if you want to express your thoughts or questions about the budget. But, you know, this is, I will tell you, this budget is more of a relief than last year's. Last year's was extremely difficult for many of us. It was a divisive process.
It was a tug of war for sure.
Excuse me, all the way through.
Yeah.
And you know, this year we're continuing to fill out the hiring of the new officers that we approved last year.
In fact, this budget is a bit less than
it is. It's a decrease from last year, but nonetheless, I mean, what ultimately affects the taxpayer is obviously what we end up doing that impacts their wallet. And I will tell you, there is a proposal, and I believe that it will have unanimous support to get rid of the businesses tax in this community. That will be money back into the pockets of business owners in our community. It was a request made by the Chamber of Commerce. I think in some ways a bit as a trade-off to the tax increase last year. They were looking for ways that we could
offset.
Show that we're friendly to our business community and want to continue to do everything we can to spur local business growth.
Did I read this correctly too, that part of that decrease in the budget from last year to this year had to do with some economizing?
The manager did a great job, frankly, when he came in, looking at those departments that he could consolidate, senior positions that he could get rid of. Obviously, I don't want to be blasé about this. There are people on the other side of those impacts, and those are the folks whose jobs that are directly affected. But he's doing what he's supposed to do, which is figuring out ways to better economize.
The business community would laud that by saying, yeah, we have to live by the rules that government has to live by when you know what? We just can't afford to keep you, or that's a job we don't have here in this company any longer.
Sure.
It happens.
Yeah, no, I get it. I have on occasion resisted the direct comparison of the private and the public, mainly because there are core basic services that must be provided, and that we aren't in the business of necessarily seeking profit, but rather meeting the service demands of our community. That being said, part of what you see the economizing that's taking place is, okay, well, that we still have to deliver the services, but how do we do it and do it in a more cost-effective way? Are there, you know, maybe in our IT department, it at one point made sense to have all the servers and to keep that in-house and to deal with the retirements of those individuals and all that, the fully loaded costs. But maybe today, under our new circumstances and the evolution of technology, it may make sense for us to have off-site servers that we rent space on, and we don't have the manpower. You know, those are just some of the thoughts, and I think the manager is wise to begin that process. I don't think we are I don't think we've yet begun to scratch the surface of what is going to come in that space.
Here we are mid-year,
and
the new budget year coming upon us then as a city. When you look forward through the rest of this year, 2017, 2018, what are some of your greatest hopes?
I am encouraged by what we're seeing in the private sector by way of business growth. You know, someone had reported before that we had a decrease in the number of business licenses that were taken out over last year. What they didn't report is that we had an increase in revenues in the business license area. And the difference being that the size of your business dictates how much you pay. And so you may have had operations that were one or two person operations that may have gone away or consolidated with another business, or who knows what that story is. But you also had larger companies, larger businesses opening who paid more for their licenses by virtue of the fact that they were larger operations with more employees. And so it wasn't an apples to apples comparison, which is why it's important to pull back the layers and the numbers. So I'm encouraged by the business climate and its continued growth in this area and our unemployment rate remaining low in the Leon County area and in the city of Tallahassee area. I'm also encouraged that with all that is around the bend to come online, the opening up of FAMU Way, the pedestrian bridge across Monroe Street, the continued development in the G Street area, the continued growth in location of businesses in the Market Street District and in Midtown. This city is hitting on not all, but many cylinders that are, in my opinion, creating the path for us to be going gangbusters as we look toward 2017, 2018, the tax revenue that will begin to come in off of the 1 cent blueprint 2000 sales tax, and you've got a whole nother $1 billion of projects that are in the pipeline to be done around here. You've got our construction folks who are saying they've got more business than they know what to do with, and therefore the prices for a lot of their stuff is going up because the demand is so high. Those are good problems to have, in my opinion, in our community. And based off of what's on the horizon around the bend, that's only going to continue to increase. I'm encouraged by that, and I hope that citizens take umbrage in knowing that the fundamentals of our local economy are very strong.
He is our mayor, the mayor of Tallahassee, the Honorable Andrew Gillum.
Or just Andrew.
Who we love and appreciate for his contributions both here and now and beyond. Folks, this is what we love to do. Mr. Mayor, thank you for
being
with us.
Brian, thank you very much, always.
A pleasure having you here today, and our good friend Jamie.
That's right. What's up, Jamie?
Keeps us on the numbers.
Say hey to the people, Jamie.
You know, kind of say hey. This is why we do what we do. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny is the production of Alcom Entertainment, and we are glad that you've made it a part of your Saturday. We'll be here again next Saturday morning. Our executive producer is Carl Cerny. Our associate producer, Jenny Lauer. And I will be looking for you next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks.
And I'm Sue Semrau, head coach of Florida State women's basketball team.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help, and the Tallahassee Food Challenge is a great way to do it.
Join us in giving generously. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families.
Look for the Tallahassee Food Challenge truck at your favorite grocery store in the weeks ahead. Your donation will be delivered directly to these charities that do so much to help all of us.
Take the challenge. Fill the truck.
Feed the hungry. Find out more at TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.